Good afternoon. Hope you enjoyed your lunch. I didn't hear the doorbell go off, but I'm going to assume it's time to start. My name is Aaron Connor from EWA Canada. You can blame some of the programming of the conference on me as part of the program committee, along with Nitya sitting there. I'm going to review a few of the announcements that you probably would have heard this morning. The conference presentation slides and audio are going to be posted to the conference website, and the login information is on page 5 of the program that you have. There's going to be a summary panel discussion after the coffee break, after these two sessions that we have here, so please come in to watch that. Feedback on the conference is always important to us to try and improve where we need to or do a better job if we can. So later on today, there's actually going to be an email sent out to you to ask for your feedback on a number of different questions. So please take a moment to fill that out. And next year's conference will be in Ottawa in May, the 18th to the 20th. And that was a conscious decision to put it that close because we want to move it out of the fall busy conference timetable into what we hope is a little bit freer time frame in the spring. And the weather should be nice in Ottawa then, about like it is here now. So this afternoon we're switching things up a little bit and opening up this track on certification programs and policy to include a discussion of the common criteria, which is a complementary evaluation program to what we've been talking about in terms of cryptographic module validations. So our first speaker is a systems engineer and senior evaluator at Signacom Laboratory with experience in common criteria evaluations through multiple CC schemes. He has experience with evaluations using the new NIAP-style PPs, as well as the security target-only based evaluations for a variety of different technology types. He has guided a number of vendors in meeting entropy analysis requirements, which are featured in the NIAP IAD reviews of evaluations. And he's going to be speaking to us about cryptographic requirements and the common criteria. And he hopes, this is a big job, he hopes to help lessen the pain of meeting the requirements. Please join me in welcoming Kirill Sinitsky.
Good afternoon. I have some bad news for you. You found yourself in one of those standard talk right after the lunch. So hopefully I can facilitate your digestion and restful sleep. I'm a common criteria evaluator and an engineer working at Signacom. And as you know about Signacom, we do a lot of common criteria and FIPS testing. We are accredited lab under the multiple schemes that include Canadian scheme and NIAP in US and the Turkish schemes. I will try to keep this presentation with international focus in mind, but my primarily experience will be with a NIAP and a Canadian scheme. If you have specific questions about international schemes, you can approach me after presentation. I'll try to find an answer for you, but I will likely not know what are the specifics of the German scheme and what have you. Signacom also, on top of laboratory services, does professional services, government security policies, PKI infrastructure, and what have you. I will start with a obligatory, at least to me, XKCD comic, and that pretty much covers common criteria as well. And the reason it does covers common criteria is because common criteria attempts to be this 15th universal standard, and surprisingly, in the most circumstances, it does succeed in being so. So what is the common criteria? And again, this is an outline of a talk which I'm preparing to talk about cryptographic requirements, but I don't want to assume that everybody will know outright what is common criteria, why it matters. So bear with me while I do generic introduction for it. Common criteria is ISO/IEC, and it's internationally recognized standard for security evaluations. Common criteria focuses on a whole product evaluation, be it a software, hardware, or virtualization. Common criteria is recognized internationally through the CCRA, Common Criteria Recognition Agreement, where the multiple countries sign together what is which could be classified as a trade agreement. And because it's a trade agreement, it is not agreement to certify, it's rather the agreement to recognize everybody else's work. That each government which is partakes in the Common Criteria Recognition Agreement represented by this scheme. When I talk about NIAP, it's a scheme, or United States government scheme. When I talk about CSEC, that will be Canadian Common Criteria Scheme. The schemes divide into certificate authorizing and certificate consuming schemes. There is multiple countries. I don't have all of them memorized, but to name few, Canada, US, France, Germany, South Korea, Japan, they all participate in this establishment. To name a few important websites and pointers for people who wants to start researching common criteria, and again, this presentation I was told going to be made available for uploading. A lot of the information I'm talking about, I have put in the slides footnotes so you can later look them up so you don't have to draft down notes. So Common Criteria Portal is the key international websites which lists all of the standards, which in this case Common Criteria Part 1 to 3, SEM and specific protection profile, as well as it contains scheme list. The second most important website would be Common Criteria User Forum. Common Criteria User Forum approximates in function cryptographic module user forum. It is a couple years far ahead and has been doing good work on forming international technical communities and influencing common criteria standard. Followed by that is specific common criteria scheme lists. Anytime somebody gets certified, they go on the list and it's to them is a big deal. So why do we do common criteria evaluations? Well, the short answer is that in ideal, when everything works out, you have certified with one country, and then you have a product which fits all the procurement requirements in all of the other countries. Now, it does work this way in a number of situations, but it is not always works that way. Specific acquisition policies which are drive common criteria is for US, there is a US NSTISSP number 11 which says the product acquired shall have common criteria evaluation. And for a while it was saying EL4 levels. I believe it has been updated since then. Canada, unlike US, does not have a hard requirement for common criteria. Rather than there is a procurement requirement, tenders which mandate security evaluation, which is strongly hinted is a FIPS and or common criteria. Common criteria is standard in the flux. Right now, since 2012, we've been in the process of evolution, and it is, you frequently heard, and you probably first time you heard about common criteria was, give me EL4 evaluation for common criteria. And that EL stands for evaluation assurance levels. This is something that has been going out and move towards standard protection profiles. NIAP has completed transition to standard protection profile. Other schemes has different policy. European schemes are still doing still doing EL level protection profile. Canada does both, but keeps threatening that they will stop doing EL levels. And then there's a categories of products, again, because it's in evolution and it is somewhat fragmented. There is a common criteria portal listing of the product when you finish the evaluation, and there is a NIAP list, which is called PCL. Both of them will satisfy acquisition policies. but some, depending on who you are, as a vendor, who your consumers are, you might want to have one or both. Again, this is a generic overview. Key common criteria documents is security target, and that is equivalent of security policy. Unlike FIPS, security target talks about the product as a whole, and there is a protection profile which outlines in many cases where you want to get with a specific scheme to approve you and get an evaluation, you have to claim protection profile standard. And I will be talking more about that later. Evaluation process goes through eligibility, kickoff, milestones, individual milestones for evaluation, final report, and post it where your product certificate gets on website. The reason I'm talking about eligibility and all of those milestones, because there is a scheme-specific requirements which makes difference when you have to present some of those things. And I'll be talking about entropy requirement reports, when do you need to have that ready? And I will be talking about cryptographic requirements, when do you have to have your CAVP, CMVPs, and so on and so forth. Each scheme, which represent a specific country through the common criteria recognition arrangement, has specific policy on cryptography, which drives their direction. U.S. has a NIAP policy, letter number 5, which has CVP and CMVP. They have been interchangeable. If you have CMVP for your module, great. If you don't, show insufficient CAVP list is adequate at this point. And NIAP has been, to my experience, has been threatening to go to mandate CMVP for some years now. Canada has a CCS instruction number 4, which is a little bit stricter than NIAP, and they have require CMVP for core functionality. Core functionality in this case is something your product is primarily function. If you have a router, then you don't have to show CMVP functionality, but if you have a VPN gateway, you need to show CMVP, and you need to show that how you use it for your encryption. Germany, to best of my ability, best of my knowledge, and unfortunately I don't speak German, and I hope somebody will correct me here, is that Germany only does list of approved algorithms. They don't have specific requirements as far as the crypto certification. So what is protection profile? I keep mentioning it a number of times. I talk that there is evolution, that there is a standard protection profiles and what have you. So protection profiles is a standard within a standard. We have, to best analogy, will be a very in-depth implementation guide which applied only to specific product. And the security target template, that is your final security policy, will closely resemble protection profile, or rather apply that protection profile to your product. It is defines evaluation boundary, so there is no guessing what's included and what's not included. Now, this is not a hard and fast rule. Some of the NIAP PP or standard PP are a lot more stricter on what you must include. You know, if it's a firewall, it ought to have certain functionality. If it's a VPN, it ought to have certain functionality. But there is still some flexibility in this. It defies security problem definition, security functionality, and sometimes it's the established documentation and testing activities, which has to be checked. And I'll be talking about it a little bit more. EL and standard PP. Protection profiles can be either EL or standard PP, which is a new NIAP-led direction for protection profiles. Generally speaking, standard PPs are harder to meet because they have much stricter requirements for them and the product defined in a much stricter way. Standard protection profile will also be typically the one that includes most of the cryptography. If you're dealing with EL evaluation, unless you want to, you can probably write the cryptography right out of your evaluation. And if you don't have any cryptography in your evaluation, well, then my talk doesn't really concern you. So it is possible to do common criteria without ever touching cryptography. And then there is international NIAP protection profile. International protection profiles are recognized. They are not exactly common criteria recognized agreement, but they are individual schemes sign up on collaborative protection profiles, which are recognized by multiple countries. But even when you do a standard protection profile, it is technically EL1 evaluation, and even the schemes who have not recognized protection profiles will theoretically supposed to recognize it as EL1 evaluation. And then there's the NIAP protection profiles, which are specific to NIAP. As it stands right now, NIAP protection profiles get eventually developed through international technical communities into international protection profiles. But by no means this is a certainty. So if you're thinking of doing NIAP protection profile with the goal of selling your product in Europe, you better have a buy-in from that as a scheme. Extended packages is a way to add additional functionality to protection profile. They're more a variation. You can have a network device which is a firewall, you can have a network device which is just a switch, or you can have a network device which has VPN functionality. All above firewall VPN functionality will be extended packages which add functionality to your basic device. And standard PPS has exact compliance. That is, you must do everything it says, no more, no less, and that makes it very difficult to meet the requirements when your device is not cut and dry. And this is what the standard protection profiles are out there. They are network devices, wireless LAN, enterprise ESM, mobility, app on OS, which is application operation system, encrypted storages. Out of all these protection profiles, I would say bulk of evaluation are network devices. It would be gross mischaracterization to call NIAP a network device testing schemes by numbers that what it is. There is a lot of exciting work goes into application on OS, operating system, mobility device protection profiles, but for many reasons, which I'm not going to go into it, there is hardly any, or if maybe one, evaluation according to those protection profiles. Then there is also international corroborative protection profiles. There is a network device, NDCPP, which is evolution of a NIAP PP in an international scheme. And then there is a drive encryption, which is, interestingly enough, international protection profile, standard-based protection profile, which conflicts with encrypted storage protection profile, which is NIAP. Protection profile includes security functional requirements. It includes a lot of other things, but since we're talking about cryptography, I wanted to tie cryptography to protection profile. And the way it's tied is it has a cryptographic support, FCS class in it, which outlines what cryptography must be done, what it must be doing, and how it must be doing. And it is typical, and again, there is no absolutes in this talk, so typical means in most situations. The cryptographic support requirements will be cryptographic key generation, cryptographic signature, encryption, decryption, hash, and key hash mesh authentication, random bit generation. You will notice that there is no KDF. There is a lot of things which FIPS does, which is not required by common criteria. Hopefully in the future where there is a growth of both of the programs, this will be more closely aligned. But in my personal opinion, they are good enough aligned. That is, if you're through FIPS, you are likely going to be able to satisfy common criteria requirements. And then there's assurance activities, which is a specific activities, which is, again, as equivalent to implementation guide details, which mandate zeroization, and Seedon and entropy. Zeroization is equivalent to CSP description. It's slightly less detailed, where a zeroization table only concerns about where it's stored and where and how do you zeroize and what's the key used, as opposed to all the other requirements that FIPS levies on. And then there is Seedon and entropy report, which is how do you generate enough entropy to see that requirement. And this is I'm gonna quickly and briefly go through all of those requirements. Typically, if you have a modern evaluation, FIPS CMVP evaluation, you probably already meet all of those. But for completeness sake, I listed what they are as they exist today. Cryptographic key generation, cryptographic key destruction, and I will talk about cryptographic key destruction here for a moment. And the reason for it is this is probably one of the least uniform requirements amongst all protection profiles. If you're concerned with your cryptographic key destruction, unless you do all and above and beyond, you have to look up what's the specific requirements in a specific protection profile in a specific extended package regarding the key zeroization. This is the most stringent one is in NDCPP, which is Collaborative Network Device Protection Profile. It makes zeroization is mandatory and has a very prescriptive ways of doing it. And there is a technical problems with this specific zeroization, which is flash drives and solid state drives will not be able to satisfy this requirement. Again, this is my personal opinion, but from what I've seen and participate in international technical communities and so on and so forth, I believe this requirement will be either relaxed via a technical decision or revised in the version 2. But as it exists today, you must do all of this if you are planning to be compliant. There is a cryptographic signature. This is a NDCPP and a couple of other protection profiles have a minor typos in them, but these are the requirements for RSA and ACDCA. Encryption and decryption usually is a CBC, GCM modes. Rarely you see anything else according to those standards and key sizes. Same for hashing. SHA-1 is still accepted. Reason for it is standard compliance with the TLS, all the TLS protocols. This will go away. There is now every protection profile has a disclaimer over all cryptographic strings, so it is only for backwards compatibility. And what's important to keep in mind is that different schemes treat all of those cryptographic requirements in a slightly different way. NIAP says that you must do only this and nothing but this. Other schemes are more lenient in this. They say you must do this, but if you also do something else, you can write it off, says this is not evaluated, but you don't have to disable it. And NIAP now forces you to disable. So if some of the cryptographic functionality on those lists is not part of your product, well, you might be in trouble. You need to know what you can do and what you can't do, and can you disable what else you do. This is a key hash message authentication. And random bit generation. And random bit generation is presently, well, everybody's aware, ANSI is being deprecated. Presently, it's hash DRBGH max CTRIS, Seedon 128 to 256 bits of entropy. That requirement for Seedon bits of entropy is the anchor requirement for entropy assessment report. You have to provide formal proof that you have 128 bits of entropy in it. And in order to prove that, you submit it to the CERT. You don't submit it directly to NIAP. You submit it to IID through NIAP for entropy review process. And I'll be talking about it later. And there is some exotic-ish, well, it's misnomer exotic, but those are cryptographic requirements which will be found only in specific protection profiles. So if you're just doing a network device, you don't have to be concerned with a key wrapping. And actually, in the most circumstances, you can even write out key storage out of your boundary. VLAN has a specific requirements, and there is also for folks who do wireless, there is a policy letter number 23, which comes out in effect in 2016, which will come with a number of will create problems due to way NIAP requires compliance. The documentation requirements within a security target, just like a security policy, there is a number of things that has to be included. And one of them is a certificate coverage table. Second one is a zeroization table. And entropy assessment report is usually a standalone document. Entropy assessment report is a part of all standard protection profile. That is, if you do in a standard protection profile, which includes random number generation, you must do entropy. And entropy assessment reports come in at the different times. Under NIAP, you have to submit it before you get into evaluation. So if you come to me and says, I want to certify it tomorrow, unless you have entropy assessment report, which is already ready to go, and somehow you manage to get IID to sign off on it, then we can start. Otherwise, we have probably 3 to 6 months effort where we have to convince IID to sign off on a report, and only then NIAP will take us into evaluation. The other schemes operate differently. Canadian scheme, for example, will allow you to enter into evaluation and will review entropy as part of evaluation activities. That matters because when you can get posted on a product compliant list and start selling your product varies from scheme to scheme. Overall, entropy assessment report has to include unconditioned source data analysis. That is, you are not allowed to make any claims unless you have access to raw data. There are some disclaimers, third-party sources, what have you. But generally speaking, if you can get to the raw data, you must analyze raw data and not condition. You have to describe operating condition, health testing, production consumption rate, sources, what kind of source classified correctly. A lot of sources, which are software sources, for all intents and purposes, look like hardware. For example, a microphone on a smartphone will be a software source because the data gets processed by a software. You have to present a detailed PRNG seed creation. You have to describe safe state. You have to perform 1 million samples of raw source. And operating scenarios, this is what I recommend. This is the last one. It's not actually a hard requirement I have. I am personally aware of people who got away, and I think it got away is a proper term, with not doing all of this and getting through entropy assessment report. But the conditions, testing conditions I recommend is an initial startup entropy rate. That is, you document 1 million sample of your device continuously rebooting over initial startup and idle system. Those are two worst case scenarios which will allow you to make intelligent arguments as to why under normal circumstances your device or your system has an adequate entropy. And the typical third-party cryptographic modules, we had an excellent talk about OpenSSL earlier on, and I would say majority of vendors I have seen implement some flavor or some form of OpenSSL. OpenSSL is in everything, but it has comes with its own set of challenges, and I'll talk about this later. There is a closed source software, and there is a hardware implementations, HSM, and then there is you have a CPU embedded and cryptographic accelerator standalone card, and then there is a on the chip hardware noise sources which you can tap through into the drivers. And one thing I wanted to highlight here is that for any kind of a cryptographic module vendor, it's a unique opportunity. That is, most vendors don't want to deal with entropy, don't want to deal with cryptography. They just want to implement their module and get through so they can go and get selling. Unfortunately, even with OpenSSL, even with off-the-shelf, none of those will satisfy common criteria requirement because you have to have test harness, you have to CMVP certificates, you have to have all this documentation. So if you are a cryptographic module developer and if this is your product, please make test harnesses available. Please make your platform certificates available. Post your zeroization tables. I would guess you will sell more of your product this way. And system integration blues, again, this goes to my topic where the vendor is not really interested in implementing cryptography. They're doing it because they must hit the check boxes, they must satisfy a requirement, but they're really not interested in it. Oftentimes, they heard once the OpenSSL is a way to do, and then it comes to the lab to educate what is needed to be, are their certificates applicable? And here is the typical pitfalls which will prevent you from successfully completing common criteria evaluation, because you won't be able to satisfy cryptographic requirements. Platform equivalence argument, something which is really typical for OpenSSL. You have a system which run Android Linux, but you claim, but there is only Debian Linux claim on a certificate. You can't make the connection. It's too far away. Old compliance, very old certificate. You dig up some certificate which been many, many years ago, and it's no longer applicable, doesn't include all the certificates. Certificate gap coverage. For some reason, when you were a couple years ago as a vendor was selling it to federal government, they didn't want it to this curve or that curve. Now all of a sudden you have a coverage in your hole. So ACDC AP curve P384 is not part of your certificate list. Well, if it is part of mandatory cryptographic functionality within a protection profile, you must have the coverage for that. Then there is, again, documentation. Creating those documentation, entropy, zerization, and there is a NIST SP856A and B compliance tables. Those are really, really time-consuming, and they require intimate knowledge of your cryptographic module. If you do it OpenSSL, you are on your own. That is, unless the lab choose to help you, and we can and do help the vendors, but you are on your own. If you have a third-party vendor cryptographic module, they may have help for you, but again, this is something homework you need to do, and this is the opportunity for cryptographic module vendors to improve. And last but not least, explicit CV history analysis. Strangely, part of the common criteria evaluations are being asked for explicitly to answer yes-no statements saying, when have you patched the Heartbleed? When have you patched Logjam? Even if it has nothing to do with how you use your cryptography, you still have to answer those questions. So you have to have a change log, and you have to say, as a version of this cryptographic module, these vulnerabilities are no longer applicable to me, regardless of how you use it. And then there's equivalency arguments. This is when your system, and again, this is very applicable to OpenSSL, when your module is no longer certified specifically for your product, rather you're trying to leverage off the OpenSSL, you have to present an equivalent argument. Why is your system covered by all of those modules? And I like to present it in a steps away from ideal. I would say if you have one or two steps away from ideal, it is possible anything more than this will be problematic. And steps away where it can be minor deviations from OS version. Compiler version deviation generally are not applicable. Processor model are possible, but only within the single build. Unacceptable deviations, which will outright, even if it's just the only one, will disqualify it, is processor architecture switch, OS kernel, completely different. Sometimes problematic claims is ARM with BSD, wrong modes and key sizes. Before you undertake a common criteria evaluation, the take-home message here is that you have to make sure that your crypto requirements are met fully, and you are prepared to go through, provide all the additional documentation that's needed. Another problematic common criteria claims that I have seen, and that is claiming OpenSSL certificates with just library. FIPS, if you don't integrate FIPS module or cannot integrate FIPS module, that means you cannot be covered. And I have seen this question again and again and again. There is just, in a lot of the small vendors, there is just no understanding what's OpenSSL is and how to use it. Then there's a bypass and FIPS validated code. There is the whole slew of ways you can have an open SSL FIPS module but can be not using it correctly. Modifying the module in any way is also problematic. That validates your certificates. This is not well understood, especially with open source code. Somebody gives you open source, oh, you know what, this is faster, I'll just tweak it. And if this tweak happens to touch the FIPS container, that becomes hugely problematic. And then there is another one, is multiple modules with questionable interoperability. You can have your product theoretically can have one module per one crypto primitive, but if there is no intelligent way, and if you cannot prove to me that's into the scheme that they are integrated compliantly, that's a big no-go. Operational environment, wrong key sizes, all of those are problems, and unfortunately problems are more often than no problems. All right, so this is end of my talk. Any questions? So I guess, go ahead. Common criteria, CCRA has been re-signed recently, 2012. As far as I know, it's still valid and will be for foreseeable future. Now, when you're asking me if common criteria recognition, is it still valid? Yes, it is, but its scope has been limited by the evolution and standard protection profiles. So they are traditional outside of the scope of that. Go ahead. Yes, so EL2 evaluations, that's absolutely correct. EL2 evaluations are presently covered by CCRA. The standard protection profiles are considered EL1 evaluations. So they are still, as I mentioned during the talk, they will still be, regardless of every other caveat, they will be recognized as EL1. So if you go through an IAP evaluation and then you have finished with an IAP-only protection profiles in Siri, all the other schemes will recognize your evaluation as at least as an EL1 evaluation.
The application of having to use the protection profile again, it's a scheme decision whether or not they've signed up to that collaborative
right.
PP.
That's right. Go ahead. This is, will be a question to NIAP, not that I'm aware of.
No.
They're up next.
What does next mean?
just hang around in this room.
Go ahead.
That is
correct. But there is a caveat. A lot of European evaluations are high EL level evaluations. They are EL5 and up, which will not be recognized at the full value due to CCRA because it is capped at EL2. So there is lots and lots of caveats. In this specific case, I think the best avenue will be who you're trying to sell and what are their procurement requirements are. And this is how you should approach this.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely correct. Standard protection profile is a generic name. That is, it's the form, it's EL, which is traditional, and standard protection profile, which is a new way of doing things. Both international protection profiles, mostly standard-based, and so are all of the NIAP protection profiles. So NDCPP have, NDPP was sunset this fall, and NDCPP comes into effect. That is, if you have a network device and you want to certify it through common criteria, at this point you will have to comply to NDCPP. And that will bonus points to that. There will be, there are multiple schemes who sign off to NDCPP, to recognize NDCPP, Canada being one example, and they will be recognized at the full face value.